Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe. That was your host and producer of the show, Main Street Universe, Daniel Michael. Yes, and I'll keep my guitar on me just for a little bit here, because it has something in common with our theme today. And I'd like to start off by reminding you all of our show's motto, to remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Remember that every episode is recorded in our archives. And what does this mean? This means that next week, you can listen to last week, this week, in our archive section at Main Street Universe. And don't forget to visit CircleSanctuary.org, our friend Selena Fox, doing some good work up there, planting trees and having a nice little nature reserve and festival space and worship space at CircleSanctuary.org. I'd also like to send a shout-out to my illustrious co-host, all the way joining us from high atop the mountain where lies the Temple of Gaia, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Thank you. Just another day in paradise. Today is June 6th, 2012, and that we just had the Venus eclipse the sun.
Ooh, interesting.
I think Mr. Brett, who's going to be our eye in the sky later, is going to have some information about that for us today. I can't wait to hear about that. But just another day in paradise.
Absolutely, and Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. He's also a member of a group called Artisans United on Hummer Road in Annandale, Virginia. They have still going on through July, this art show where people display their talents and their wares and all of that. And Kevin, you have Paranormal Windows and Gaia Gardens, I guess,
yep,
on display
of
these things.
And I'm going to be at the museum later on today.
At the Weems Bot Museum in Dumfries, right, Virginia, as a tour guide, sort of a psychic tour guide.
Right.
At the Weems Bot Museum, considered to be one of the most haunted places.
Second haunted in Virginia.
Second most haunted in all of Virginia. And unfortunately not joining us today is our co-hostess, Melissa DeGenova. She's in the process of a move, but I'd still like to send a shout-out to her. She has a blog called The Nerdy Pagan. It's N-E-R-D-Y-P-A-G-A-N, period, T-U-M-B-L-R.com, nerdypagan.tumblr.com. And also, don't forget our good friend, Zohara Hieronymus, www.zoharaonline.com. She had a book out called Sanctuary of the Divine Presence, all about Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. And could be, don't forget Lily, Esoterica, www.esotericaonline.com. It is still your New Age, Interfaith, Focus, Herbs, Crystals, Stones, Oils, Candles, Incense, Divination Tools, and more. That's www.esotericanova.com. Future, she does desire to be a brick-and-mortar store again. We wish her the best of luck, or better yet, the best of intention in that goal. today's topic will be string theory and time travel. And it looks like we have a caller. I don't know if that caller is trying to call in to talk to us. Let me check the number out. I am not, as of yet, familiar with that number, but then again, we've lost that skill of remembering phone numbers.
Eric, 646, caller, are you? Did you want to ask something to the room, or are you just listening?
Click on the caller, and we'll see what's up.
I think they're just listening.
Okay, no problem.
And we're trying to bring the chat room up. There's something wrong with their launch or whatever. So we should have that up shortly also. So if the caller is in the chat room, we will be talking.
Yep. We were curious. It might be our co-host, Brett.
Yeah.
Hillman, our eye in the sky.
He is at school, too, so it might be he's there, and we'll check in with us in a few.
Yes. Stay in school, kids. Go to school.
Because there's no jobs out here, so you might as well keep busy in some fashion. Or
yeah, get some grants and some loans and stuff and stay in school for a while.
That's really why we're here.
The recession ends.
That's why Main Street Universe is here. We're talking to people who are now doing something now that they are no longer in the corporate cube, exploring life beyond the cube.
Mm-hmm. All right. String theory, time travel. If I pluck on a guitar string, as I just did, the string will vibrate. This vibration can be, with will and perhaps skill, manipulated to form another note. A slightly different vibration. If I then continue to pluck, or pull on the strings, and continue to manipulate the notes into multiple notes in an organized pattern, I now have a melody or a song. However, simply by plucking on the first note, simply by pulling on the first string, I have engaged in a physical demonstration of what theoretical physicists refer to as string theory. When I engage in the act of pulling on a guitar string, I am causing an interaction between all of the strings. When I pull or pluck the string, this causes a vibration. This vibration not only makes a sound, but it causes the other strings to vibrate. You may not hear the other strings vibrating, but vibrate they will. This is a basic primal interaction. The Pythagorean philosophers and Pythagoras himself were fascinated by the idea of striking or pulling on a string to achieve different pitches, different notes. Pythagoras, in fact, is said to have seen the universe as a harmony of spheres. He thought of the universe as a beautiful, harmonious song or an ongoing symphony. It is a subject of debate whether or not Pythagoras actually discovered the different pitches on a string based on string length or as a result of manipulating them in some way. However, it is clear that he, Pythagoras, and his followers were fascinated with the idea of everything being music, sound, mathematics, and yes, mystical beliefs. Of these metaphysical theories, Pythagoras believed in transmigration, another word for reincarnation. So let us examine the evolution of this fascination with strings. On an atomic level, there are the particles that make up the atom. Break down the atom's nucleus, and you reduce it to protons and neutrons. Reduce them, and you have what are called quarks. The quarks are the strings of light, or light vibrations, smaller than the components in the atoms. All things are made up of these light vibrations. And like their larger part, the larger parts that make that they make up, electrons, they live in relationship to the other strings of light. Their unified field is necessary for their existence. There are in physics four agreed upon interactions amongst particles. These interactions are as follows: gravitational, electromagnetic, strong nuclear reactions, and weak nuclear reactions. Einstein's theory of relativity explains the gravitational aspects of these interactions. However, the other three interactions, explained through quantum physics, will sometimes create mathematical anomalies. When you attempt to apply them with the theory of relativity, that is when these anomalies occur. So string theory attempts to solve these equations. Quantum physics claims that you have what are called fermions, or matter, and bosons, transmitters, or force carriers. It is said that two bosons can occupy the same space. So what you have here is something different than we're accustomed to in our physical reality. You have two particles that can occupy the same space. As time went on, a new form of boson was discovered, called a graviton. So, what then happened is that what was discovered mathematically, one of the equations resulted in having gravity being a necessary consequence, thus solving the quantum physicist's dilemma, but potentially linking Einstein's theory with quantum physics rather than them contradicting. So to say that in short, string theory, the superstring theory that came up with the discovery of the new boson called a graviton, add this graviton into the equation and it sort of can link into one unified equation that goes along with Einstein's theory of relativity, or at least that's how I come to understand it. So the three returning to the one, gravity being a necessary consequence. Now why, one might ask, why all of this? Well, many physicists believe that understanding string theory could help us to unravel some of the greatest mysteries in the universe. Black holes, dark matter, time travel? Maybe. Let us explore time travel, for example. In 2011, a scientist named Professor Harry Gordon developed a theory based on a discovery made at CERN Lab in Switzerland. The scientist at the CERN Lab claimed to have discovered a particle that moves faster than the speed of light. This violates the laws of elemental physics. Professor Harry Gordon saw that this particle called a neutrino could hold the key to sending messages back in time. So the name of this particle that moves faster than the speed of light is a neutrino. When interviewed in his home by the BBC, British broadcasting, it quickly becomes evident that Professor Harry Gordon has personal reasons for promoting this theory of being able to send messages back in time. Mr. Gordon's wife had passed away. It is clear he was still mourning her loss. In what almost begins to look like a cruel interview, he admits wanting to send himself or his wife a message from the future or the present back in time to attempt to save her life. This was in 2011. As the year passed, scientists retested the theory that neutrinos are faster than the speed of light. Now, upon further testing, it was concluded that neutrinos are in fact not faster than the speed of light. So, which experiment do you believe? Well, that is up to you. In 1949, Kurt Gödel, an office mate of Einstein's, theorized that if the universe rotates, and if you could exit it safely and then jump back in as it's spinning around, you could pick a point in the past to come back before you left. So it's the idea of the spinning universe, and it spins around like a cylinder, and you just sort of exit it safely, perhaps in some sort of bubble, and then pick a point from which to re-enter, and you could go into the past or future. Now, back then, that was considered a very revolutionary equation, and Kurt Gödel was considered, and still is considered by physicists today, to have been a sort of a revolutionary and very brilliant mathematician. Then there is the theory, or the idea and reality of wormholes. Physically explained, take a sheet of paper, draw two dots on the paper, then fold the sheet of paper together until the two dots meet. This is a simple physical wormhole model. However, in reality and in the universe, consider that the energy needed to do this in a universal sense, physically, is comparable to that of an exploding star, a black hole. This is far more energy than humans, as of now, are able to generate. There is as well the idea of spiritual time travel. Time travel in our myths, in our mythology. There is a Japanese myth, Urashima Taro. Urashima Taro was a fisherman who frees a sea turtle from a net. A few days later, a very beautiful sea princess visits him and invites him to the house of the sea king. He takes her up on her offer, and he ends up marrying her. He lives in splendor for 3 amazing years. Eventually, he begins to miss his parents and wants to see his old village again. He then asks the sea princess, his wife, if he can return to his home island and visit his family. She says yes, then gives him a beautiful box. The box is covered in shells and such. She says, "You may return to your old home, but do not open this box." So, Urashima Taro returns to his home island. Upon his arrival, he finds that his village is gone. Nothing is there. Nothing familiar. And eventually, he stumbles across a monument. It's of himself, of his parents. It states that he and his parents died some 300 years ago. To him, Urashima Taro, he had only been in the undersea kingdom, in the palace, the undersea palace, with his new sea princess wife for 3 years. But in fact, 300 years had passed. Frustrated, looking for answers, he opens the box that his wife had given him and, of course, told him not to open. A mist sprays from the box, engulfing him. The mist covers him. He begins to rapidly age. And then he dies. You see, this is a theme that happens in myths of the past. The idea of being given an object not to get rid of, not to open, etc., etc., etc. And that object acting as sort of a magical protection or a magical bubble, protecting the person from aging, suffering the effects of time. He was, in a sense, in a protective bubble when the box was closed. Some quantum physicists think it is possible, I said possible, to recreate a bubble of this sort, to recreate a protective bubble. This can enable time travel. This is an example, as there are so many of myth inspiring science. And with that being said, any thoughts on time travel and protective bubbles, Kevin Baird?
Well, bubbles exist for a reason. They happen naturally. So, you know, you look at the planets and the universes, as they spin, they tend to become spherical. So it's almost like when you're not a solid, you're more of a sphere, you know, whether you're a raindrop or a planet or a universe. You're getting a little etheric, you know, metaphysical in that sense, but where you are is exactly where you are supposed to be, and the particles you were talking about and the quarks, I think, are really like gateways to the entryway into the strings of other realities.
Right. Almost like that's the thing, and this is where it gets tricky. When you're talking about strings, just like when you see the strings on the guitar, you think of them as being really close together like that, the different realities, the different strings. And in order for this instrument to be complete, just like in order for realities to be complete, they need each other for this to be, you know, a complete string instrument that makes sense, instead of just like strings stringing across the room for no reason. I know that's when you get into tricky stuff. People start to even get into theories of, oh, does that mean it's planned or da-da-da-da-da? I'm just saying they live in relation to each other. Just like they say electrons live in relation to each other and atoms live in relation to each other. They're not just there as a single solid object by itself. It exists because all of the other atoms exist. And that's where it can get difficult to explain to people. Almost like how we all need each other, how all the elements need each other. You know, you need this balance. And it's true in the subatomic world as well, and in the quantum mechanical world as well. Or at least that's how I've come to understand it. I mean, I'm not perfect, and I'm not a quantum physicist, I'm just saying, but of reading about it, that's how I've come to understand it. Because they say that for this to happen, this music stand, the electrons and the atoms, you know, sort of need each other to exist. And the same thing with these strings. And so that gives you the funny answer of, or question, I guess would be a better way to say it. What's between the strings, right? Like you were saying, the gateways, the doorways, if there is a physical between the strings, that is. We're, of course, talking about quantum mechanics, so we're talking about very small spaces.
Relative light.
Yeah, vibrations, light, energy, more so than, you know, a physical space. Well, you're talking about time travel, the idea of, and it's been said both in myth and by some scientists, that there almost would be this need for us to be in something protected, almost like the myths tell us. In this case of the Japanese myth, where Shima Taro, he had this protective box that his wife told him not to open, and when he opened it, he felt the effects of time. I've heard physicists talk about the same thing. Maybe time travel is possible for the physical human to travel through time, but there'd need to be some sort of this protection, this protective bubble, this some kind of protective device or whatever it is that allows you not to age while experiencing it, much like in the myths. And that could open the door to some very confusing stuff, but string theory and time travel is, you know, pretty heavy topic. There's another myth that's similar that I got here. Finn McCool of Irish folklore, he goes to visit King of the Fairies, parties for a few days with the King of the Fairies, as Finn McCool is known to do, and he wishes to return to the regular, you know, mundane world. Finn McCool does, and the King of Fairies gives him a magical horse. And here we're going to have the same theme again. The King of the Fairies says, do not dismount this magical horse. So, of course, Finn McCool sets out on his journey, goes back to the mundane world, and at some point decides to jump off the horse, and he begins to age very quickly and dies. And again, it's another myth where, kind of given this instruction not to violate this one thing, you've given this protective thing, in this case it's a steed, in the other case it was a box. And the person's curiosity gets the best of them, and they have to, you know, no longer be in the protection of this, and then they end up aging and feeling the effects of time. And there's also the other idea of time travel, which is, of course, that of a non-physical nature. That is, of course, astral or spiritual, or people, of course, in the metaphysical world, often it's looking into the future, or attempting to look into the future, or attempting to make sense out of the past, such as a past life regression, past life therapy. Some people are haunted by vivid, wild dreams or emotions that they can't explain from this incarnation, so they attempt to look to the past to see if maybe there were things that occurred in former lives. In the case of Pythagoras, by the way, we mentioned the Pythagoreans and the great mathematician and metaphysical believer, practitioner, Pythagoras. He claimed to have very vividly remembered four lives. And that was an integral part, that was a very important part of the Pythagorean philosophy, was a belief in transmigration, a belief in past lives and in future reincarnations. So I don't know to what degree they attempted to work with these past lives. I don't know how detailed Pythagoras and his group got with that. But I do know that they definitely had that as part of their belief system, the Pythagorean philosophers. He and his followers have you ever had, Kevin, a past life regression session before?
I have. It was done through one of my master teachers, Neville Johnston.
Okay.
He's of telepathictv.com.
Right. I've seen Neville before. Do you remember? I do remember one thing you said about that. One time you thought it was a Native American life.
Yes.
Did you have any other visions outside of that? Was that pretty much the one?
There's sometimes where I dream about it. You know, I have back to like Roman times. I've not had past life regression done by somebody except for Neville. That like opened the door for me, and that's almost like showing me how to operate the remote on the cable box or something.
Yes.
So, yes. But I think that those quarks that you're talking about before are sort of like the apex between universes. You know, it gets really small, 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 infinitely, and then boom, you're able to pass through it as a doorway or a gateway, and then it opens up to an infinite amount of possibilities afterwards.
And it also plays into what, of course, a lot of pagans talk about is the idea, and even and scientists as well talk about, depending on their leanings, is the worlds within worlds, like that we may have many universes right inside of us. And the movie Men in Black, I can think of, was one of the famous examples where they open the locker and it's like
right.
A whole bunch of other, they're inside a teeny tiny locker or whatever, you know, and it just keeps going on to this sort of infinite mirroring universes, which is kind of what we're talking about, how things live in relation to each other and that there are many, many universes, or what in the witchy world is often called the multiverse. Sort of, it's one great thing with many within it. So oftentimes in pagan circles, the term multiverse is used, and it's also used in physics, quantum physics especially, this idea of many string universes. And in the string theory, they sort of all are in different dimensions, and live in relation and within harmony of each other. In a way, they sort of need each other. And that becomes the interesting point. And it makes me wonder about decisions one makes. Can a decision actually, does that jump you into another string, right? Does it just change your reality on this string? Or does making a decision actually cause you to sort of vibrate on another string? Now you get to have this other destiny. You know, but
right.
I don't know if that's on the same string or not, and that's getting a little loopy, I know, but that's the way it is with these. These are all theories based on some realities and based on some mathematic realities. Of course, I don't have the equation all drawn out with my research here between my day job, but there's an interesting way how myth inspires science, and then how science inspires myth, and it has this relationship. And even in ancient myths, like I mentioned before, this Japanese myth of Urashima Taro, this fisherman is protected by this box that he's not supposed to open. And of course, like all the myths go, he opens it up and ruins everything. But, or at least himself, not everything maybe. He ends up aging and dying. And that is something, that's a theory that scientists are working on now, the quantum physicists are working on right now, is this idea of maybe we can time travel, but it has to be with some sort of protective box or bubble. And I believe our eye in the sky, Brett Rubin-Hillman, is here. I'm going to go ahead and try to get him on the phone. Are you there, Brett?
I'm here.
Okay. There's a symbol.
We're having trouble getting the chat room open.
Yeah.
Caught in a job.
The chat room is open. You guys just aren't in it.
We've been having a few things. Like the other night when we had Mark Mandrake. And by the way, hello, Mark Mandrake. By the way, we put you up for a while as the featured episode of our show. And the callers were looking funny when they came in. They didn't have the normal icons. So there's some weird update stuff going on with the host queue. So we're not seeing the chat room now. I saw the 1-2-3 chat room. I saw that one earlier, actually. Maybe they've upgraded it in some way, but I had the 123 chat room up just for a little bit. On the host queue page, you have two chat rooms. You have one that's a separate window, then you have sort of a quick flash chat room, they call it. And the 123 flash chat room.
All right, well, we're trying that one now.
I did have that one up for
right.
a while.
Looking at the wheel going round and round.
Oh,
well,
no.
We have Veronica, and we have a guest with us in the chat room, and myself, of course.
Awesome.
But right, we might need you to be our eyes in the chat room until we can get this guy up and going.
I'll do my best.
Anyway, do you have an Eye in the Sky report for us today, Brett?
Or did
indeed
you want to comment?
Indeed, I do. Oh, wait.
Go ahead.
I do.
Okay, good.
This week, Mercury will be moving into Cancer. Tomorrow, in fact. And this may show up in more communicative exploits in the terms of emotion. You might talk about your emotions more, maybe talk about your feelings. It may just come up in casual conversation. Of course, Mercury always dealing with communication, and it always is interesting as it moves around, especially since it goes so fast, it seems to us at points it's going backwards, which creates its own little mucky-mucks, and I don't believe it is now, but it would, when it does, we have our fun in the chat room or in the show as well. For our 101 segment today, Pluto, the last planet in our journey through the solar system astrologically, Pluto is a planet of transformation, and it stays for about, 13, 14 years, it stays in the same place for a long time, the longest of all the planets. So when you hear Pluto is somewhere, it's probably going to be there for a while. It is now currently in Capricorn. And generally, it is really efficient, like the Earth signs tend to be. So Pluto in an efficient Capricorn really deals with a lot with structures. And in fact, if structures aren't extremely high standard, it tends to have things fall down. It can also show a lot of psychological stability. It'll show in thinking patterns, problems, especially when it comes to things such as authority, which may cause right now a lot of businesses seem to be breaking down that have been in place for, even 40, 50 years. We seem to be losing a lot of really important big businesses for making really bad decisions or unethical decisions. Things start coming out of the surface. Lazy thinking gets really kicked. Cancer the goat gives them a real good kick, is a good way to put it. And that's what I have for you.
Oh, cool.
Any questions?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because you and I are both on the cusp of Aquarius and Capricorn. And so we both have some Capricorn there in us. And
yes.
Transformation can also mean, I would think, not just what you were talking about these things crumbling down, but also, I'm just asking you this question, could it also be, the building of new things?
Well, of course, if something falls down, something has to refill in the gap. So what perfect time would that be? And it would have to start with, what went wrong here and what can we do to fix it? Change is good. Sometimes it doesn't feel good when it's happening, but change ultimately usually works out for the best.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was definitely the feeling I was getting from it, was the idea of bad and good. That it's also a good time for maybe a new upstart.
And remember, it's going to be there for 11 more years.
Yeah.
So we're going to have some interesting shifts back and forth for 11 years. It's there for about 13, 15 years. When it's in a planet. So Pluto takes a long time. I mean, think about 12 years compared to your lifespan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only been through four planets, you know, in your lifetime, two or three, you know, two in mine. And it's just slowly making its thing, going to do its thing. Next week for the 101 segment, we are going to be getting our official go through all the signs, because we are going to be going through the 12 houses, and because we need to talk about their rulers, we will be talking about all 12 zodiacal signs.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be another 12 months of fun, or 12 weeks, 12 months. That'd be a very long segment, but... But it'll take a quarter of a year, especially
right,
if something that makes me have to skip a week. So we'll be here for a while.
Yeah. Kevin was asking about, did you hear anything about the Venus being...
Eclipsing the sun.
I did, but I don't have any astrological information on what that would mean.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right, well, that's the Eye in the Sky report. There's our symbol. And we were talking about any thoughts for
him. Oh, that it's a Gemini eclipsing a Gemini. Now that I'm thinking about it. So, I mean, they're the same time, so they would the sign be arguing with itself, as its two natures tend to do?
Yeah, because it has the two characters of Gemini twins.
Mm-hmm.
And again, four is a number of stability, two and two. Not really sure where that's going. Excuse me, I've really had like something in my throat all morning. But any comments, any thoughts on, we were talking about time travel and myth as well as quantum mechanical things. I mentioned
I noticed a lot on string theory. Have you mentioned connected particles?
We were talking about the relationship that particles do have with each other. And there's the mention of the four things that particles, the four ways they interact, and that is gravitational, electromagnetic, greater nuclear, and weaker nuclear reactions.
So have you mentioned... Einstein's spooky theory, spooky action at work. If you take two sister particles and take them miles apart, you change how one works, the other one makes the exact opposite change,
mm-hmm.
no matter how far away it is.
And that was part of it, because there's the idea in quantum theory that something always has something else to mirror it. You know, so there's always sort of some other thing living in relation, you could call it opposite, that sort of mirrors it. So if there's this reality, there's got to be another one. If there's a physical matter or the fermion, then there's a boson or a transmitting energy particle to match it, I guess, would be how I saw it, according to the quantum theory. So that could be very similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that actually is. It's pretty much the unscientific term of the scientific idea that you had just mentioned.
Right. And I guess one way to take this down away from, I guess, the study hall, if you will,
mm-hmm.
to the Main Street aspect is how can we use this rather, some would say, odd discussion in our practical lives today. And one aspect I would say, or at least for people that believe in metaphysical practice, is the idea of, just as we had mentioned, that the boson, the energy transmitter, also has a matter counterpart. What about our role of creation in this, or manifestation? Could be one way to look at it. The idea that if we start generating a will or a thing in an energetic way, then a physical one will manifest simply just to obey the laws of the universe. So sort of looking at magic, again, from a scientific or quasi or quantum scientific, whatever terms you want to use, perspective. And I know some people that are more deeply, let's say more deeply, I guess, wanting to make this more of a witchy or pagan discussion would be like, why do you always bring the science part up? Well, because to me that part is fascinating because I like how myth and science work back and forth with each other. Now, in truth, I believe in metaphysical things and spiritual experiences and all that, but I'm always fascinated by the idea of how science catches up to myth almost, using, again, the example of the protective box for this guy to or Shima Tarol to travel through time until, of course, he opens the box, releasing its protective quality. And now scientists are discussing protective bubbles for time travel. But in use in daily life, the idea of creating energy in order to have something physical or a physical reality appear for you, almost as if it's just obeying a scientific law. And of course, perhaps the ancients discovered, or maybe just stumbled across, these techniques for doing so, and now science is catching up. Because it is funny, when you hear a physicist talk, and the more that I did doing a bunch of research for this topic, they almost sound like metaphysical practitioners themselves. It's just a lot of language they use, and a lot of the terminology they use, and especially the ones that are more curious. I mean, some of them are a bit more stodgy, I guess, and a bit more protective of status quo. But to me, a real scientist, using the scientific method, should always keep a sense of wonder and a sense of what if. Because that's their job, basically. Science is an organized method of solving a problem. We're coming to a conclusion, if we don't want to use the word problem.
Right.
And, Kevin, do you have a card today?
I do. I have a few, actually. I have 111.
Oh, do you really? Speaking of putting it into practical use, we have Kevin Baird's Horizon Oracle with us. How did that reading go the other day? That lady seemed a bit demanding.
Which reading was
that? Yesterday when I visited you, this lady, she was like, why are you reading here? I don't want to read here. I want to go there, and I want to do this. And she seemed a little bit...
She was new.
Okay.
She was wanting absolute privacy.
I understand that. I think I've actually asked for that way back when before I knew anything. And I was like, aren't we supposed to go to like a dark back room or something?
Yeah.
When I was really young. And we did. It was this guy, I remember it was this long-haired guy from Sweden. And I think that was the first professional reading I ever did. And he was kind of a very light character, if you meet one of these personalities. He had a very kind of high, soft voice and this kind of Swedish accent. And, hello, how are you today? And I was like, aren't we supposed to be, like, in a back room somewhere? You know, I was picturing, you know, candles and all that in a dark room. But they did have a room like that in the back, so we went there, and that's where we did the reading.
That's because you watched too much television before.
But anyway, let us.
Well, first, I'd like to say that the first card is the puzzles card, and it's associated with the time 10:19.
Okay.
That can be 10:19 in the morning or 10:19 in the evening. Like, if you're thinking, like, if you look at the image, and that you can go to my website, which is at www.templeofgaia.com. Click on the Horizon Oracle image that's right there. It will jump you to a page that will list the cards by the times they're associated with, that you can scroll down and join us here, whether you're listening in archive or listening live right now. Again, the time is 10:19. And I associated the times to the images because if you are thinking about what you're going to be doing for the rest of the day, it's roughly about 10:19. You've got your morning start, you've had your coffee, you know, and you've got that new engine warmed up, you know, that personal engine that helps you complete the things you need to get done. Now that you have this ambitious energy, what are you going to do? And the image shows someone who has a lot of thought bubbles around their head, thinking about this and that and this and that and this and that, to a point to where they're not getting anything done about thinking about what needs to get done. So later on in the evening, roughly 10:19, you're either thinking about going to bed or getting ready to go out for the evening, because, you know, activities evening-wise don't really start until like 11 or so or 12. So you're planning your evening about...
Depending on your lifestyle.
Yeah. So the first card is thinking about what you want to get going, and that we've moved out of our first phase of that, which would be back in first part of March, where you would be planning your spring. And now that we're coming up on the summer solstice,
right,
June 21st, just for everybody's sake out there, then now we need to start planning for what we're going to be doing for the summer. And then maybe what are we going to do as we start planning for the fall to get here? Are we going to go back to school? Or is there some other activity, maybe taking summer off, or that we've been unemployed for this time or something, and keeping yourself busy? So the puzzles card is really, we're in a place of quandary, puzzlement, thinking about what it is to do. The next card supporting this is the in touch card, and that is associated with the time 12:39. And it shows two stick figures, gender not known or revealed, laying out in the middle of somewhere, maybe having a picnic or a rendezvous or something, or just contemplating life together. This is an image that talks about being in touch with someone else that's close to us, either in a platonic sense or the ultimate for intimacy even as well.
Right. That's the one where they're laying on the beach, or sort of laying on the – yeah. Oh, okay, laying on the – yeah, like they're –
they're at roadside, basically.
But they're laying down sort of casually, enjoying each other's company, going, hey, let's get reacquainted and have a nice, pleasant day, have an outing, whatever sort of thing.
So looking at the puzzle card and this card working together, it's really talking about what are you going to be doing, what plans are you going to be making related to the relationships that you have in your life, whether it's your coworker, which could be a soulmate, because some of our coworkers that we spend 40 hours a day with, you know, 56 weeks out of the year in the same cube or office together, they tend to turn into something that's sort of like the non-intimate spouse, or what I refer to as the day spouse.
Right. It's the funny thing about coworkers is they're not the people that you might necessarily, like in your outside life, call a partner or a friend. They're a work friend. And you sometimes put them into this category, mm-hmm. but you spend more time with them than you do your wife,
yes.
or your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or whatever. So it's important to have a good work relationship, because you're spending more time with them than your family, than your genetic family.
Ask yourself, who are you really married to?
At least more awake time, right? Yeah, really. Who are you really? What is your marriage? So when people talk about the importance of making your life and your job something you want and enjoy, consider that's what you spend most of your time doing. Which is why I'm making the transition to being a musician and then trying to get radio to pay me.
In closing here real quick, I do now another Main Street Universe episode and show every Friday.
Of course.
From 5 to 7 or 5:30 to 7, depending on if I have something that I have to do up until 5 for that day. This Friday I'm going to be working at the gallery and I won't be getting off until 5. So the show is going to start at 5:30. But basically it's a show about me giving readings and also stories that are associated with two-card groups from the Horizon Oracle. And that is, again, for the people who have the decks but have not gotten the workbook yet, it's a great go-to kind of thing, because you get a real-time, live kind of experience about my take on what the images are and how they come together in a story and what message they're trying to convey. And also I do readings in the room as well. Normally my readings are about $180 an hour if you come and visit me at Chrysalis or Sticks and Stones. And if you go through the network, it's a little more expensive. It's roughly $300 an hour. So coming into the chat room on the Blog Talk Show on Fridays is a really great way to get in touch with me and to have yourself like a quick reading or whatever. It sort of like suspends time and, you know, the priorities. So, again, every Friday from 5 to 7. And I don't want to get in the way of the pagans tonight, and that's why I...
Right. They start at 9. So if you're before 9, you're all right.
Yeah, it gives people a chance to order a pizza, get beers going or whatever, so they can tune in to pagans tonight. And, Brett, you're on that sometimes too, right?
I am on every week at on Sunday. But at 9 o'clock for Back to Basics.
Or a show that used to be called The Young Witches Show is now called Back to Basics, and every Sunday with his co-host, S. Danielle. Speaking of co-hostesses, we are not joined today by Melissa DeGenova, and I'm not sure if she's returning or not. I will let that be totally up to her. There's no bad blood or anything going on, folks, so no need to start drama.
She's in the midst of moving.
I know that she was going to talk about Rumpelstiltskin as the time traveling.
Or the beanstalk or something. You had suggested something.
String theory.
But she's in the process of a move, and we'll see if she returns or not. She may not, depending on how her new life and her new place goes for her. I believe she did land a job there, so don't want to reveal anything more than that. Just saying we'll see how that goes, see how it happens. Told her though I'll always try to keep a slot open for her, even if she just wants to do like a once-a-month show or something like that. And so we'll see how that evolves. Today our topic, time travel and string theory, and the idea of how things live in relation to each other, and how the idea of can scientifically be possible to travel through time with the idea of protected bubble. And also, of course, what does that mean to us and how can we use it in our everyday lives? And I use the example of manifestation, the idea of in string theory you have the bosons, the transmitters, the fermions, the physical matter, and that you sort of need one to have the other, and they live in relationships. So if you can create a new boson of your own, a creative transmitted energy through a technique or practice, and you create a new physical reality for yourself, you could also view it, just the idea of time travel, therapeutically, like Pythagoras did. He believed in transmigration, another word for reincarnation, and believed, or was rumored to believe, to have remembered 4 or 5 lives vividly. And some people can view this therapeutically. It's why they go get past life regression therapies, is to work through emotions, and sometimes just for fun, just to see what they were or what they think they were, if a good reader or progression therapist. I don't think I've ever had that done before professionally. I've tried hypnosis, self-hypnosis meditations to achieve it. And I've had dreams, like really vivid dreams that were supposedly of past lives. But I don't know whether or not they actually were, or if it's just my own dramas developing in my mind to satisfy whatever emotional need I had at the time. So it's hard to tell, because some of these visions and things are fantasies that are legitimate and very practical and useful fantasies, because they're helping you to work through emotional states. And some of them are legitimate visions of actual things that really did happen in the past or might happen in the future. And some of them felt like they could easily be interpreted into what was going on in my life at the time. Have you ever had, Kevin, just a vivid dream that you thought was a past life?
Yeah.
And
I had a dream last night that I was climbing the Sistine Chapel. And that there was a friend who was there too, and it was really a friend that I've known for some 100 plus years. His name is Keith McInturf, and he has very long arms that he can, like, he grabbed the corner of the cathedral, and that he was able to go to the edges where the cornerstones are, grab it, and shimmy his way up the side of the corner of the chapel, basically, or the church. And I was able to get my way up, I would say, probably about 4 or 5 stories, but he was up some 25 stories. And I was looking down the ground and seeing how high up I was, and I'm like, how am I going to get back down from here? But I was on a very comfortable, you know, outcrop of stone, was able to see out a great distance and see what's going on, you know, in the area, in the region. So I just sat down and was just watching life, and then next thing I know, I woke up.
I had one that we're running through the woods and running through the woods, and I guess we were in ancient Ireland or Scotland or something, and the guy's like really urgent. He's like, we got to get back and warn everybody, and it turned out to be like for this like lost druidic tribe or something like that, but I think that was a fantasy, you know, I don't think it was a real past life. But it was just interesting because he goes, we got to go back and save our people. And in the dream, I kind of became me. I'm like, what people? What are you talking about? He's like, us, the Celts, the Druids. Something about, like, the Romans are coming and all this. And I was like, no, we don't make it. I think it was a fantasy, though. But it was one of those ones that felt very real. We talked about lucid dreaming last week. But now we also have an expanding schedule. Of course, tomorrow, Evan is going to be here. I'm in pass.
Daniel?
Yes.
I want to say first, saved physically or saved them spiritually?
I'm not sure. In the dream,
I think that might be a message to you, personally.
Right. It's possible. Like, in some reason, it could just be loosely interpreted as pagan in general, right? Like, we're supposed to be some sort of voice.
Could be.
All of us, even, I would say, in the conversation right now, and including some of the folks in the chat room. It could have been, I didn't think of it that way. It felt more like a really fast-moving adventure dream at the time, so maybe I wasn't thinking of it quite.
We have real dream journeys as a person in the chat room, so that's apropos. Hello,
yeah.
Real. Hello for Saggy and Veronica and guest. 1, 2, 3, 1.
And everybody joining us, thank you very much. And, yeah, I've had other very vivid story dreams. I had one where I was, literally, I think I mentioned this one on the air, where I was like a slave girl in one life, and then in the very next life, I was this horrible tyrant. Like, it was this experiment. They said, what if we took this really pleasant, does what she told, sweet sort of slave girl that everybody loves, sort of like a house servant, someone that wasn't, like, physically abused, but was a servant in a, like, really ornate palace or something like that, and then in the next life was given all this power. Yeah, and then I just was a brutal tyrant, totally sold out. You know, just totally did like every awful thing that a tyrant would do.
Contrasting reality.
Different lessons.
Yes.
Different lessons.
Yeah, exactly. Different lessons for the next different life. And again, I don't know if that was an actual past life thing or just a nice message being sent through, you know, the sort of epic dream world fantasy. But it was very vivid. I woke up very moved by that dream.
Could
and
also be the two different extremes.
Yes, and it was being narrated by, like, it was sort of being told to me in the dream, almost narrated by the woman that was the mother of the original slave girl life, and saying how, like, you know, it was sad to watch you turn into this, you know, brutal tyrant. It was almost like somebody was narrating it. It was a really fascinating dream.
Also, I'd like to do a news update that Ray Bradbury has just died.
Oh, no.
He was the author of Fahrenheit 451 and The Martian Chronicles.
He's definitely provided. Speaking of great epics and great fiction and all that, Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, was an icon for fantasy and fiction for a long time, really.
Yeah.
I'm just looking to see if they live.
That couple of my favorite stories right there. I mean, Wow.
Yeah, Fahrenheit 451, you know, about book burning and censorship types of issues that come up and arise. That always makes for good fantasy to me, is when it touches upon real things and real world issues. Like they say, Tolkien, some of the horrors. Well, some say he wasn't inspired by his wartime experiences. I say that's a difficult stretch to imagine he wasn't.
But, I was saying, how could he not be just by existing?
Exactly. And that's why the evil in Tolkien's evil was so big and dramatic and evil, because they use the Hobbit village as his sort of, you know, safe little English village he came from. Then he sees these awful, you know, tanks and new machinery. I imagine the worst war that I would not have wanted any part in, which means I probably was in it, was World War I, with the trench warfare and the new machines coming out, and just that must have just been a horrifying war to be in.
Yeah.
So Ray Bradbury did die then. There was also, I said I would mention this, there's a young boy who was 14 years old who shot himself. Some people actually think it was an accident. Like they didn't. There's people thinking it wasn't a suicide per se, that it was sort of he was messing around with a gun and it went off. Don't really know, but his name was Josh Eisner, and his family is very good friends with my friends, the Gallaghers, who I grew up with, and just wanted to send our prayers to their family for that tragic accident. Since we're bringing up people that have passed, this was this past week, and I told her I would mention it on the show. And like I said, some of the people were thinking it was actually just an accident. There didn't seem to be any indicators, but you never know what's going on in a young person's mind, especially at that age, 14 years old. This kid had met some of his idols. He was a young drummer, and he had met the drummer from Godsmack, and I think had communications with him. I believe some other celebrities. He was sort of a drum phenom, and he got the attention of some folks on YouTube and stuff like that. So, without any more details, I just want to say send our prayers out to the family of Josh Eisner, who passed away this week. And this takes me back, since we're kind of on the death topic now. The one scientist I mentioned earlier was discussing the possibility, not necessarily of time travel, but of sending a message back in time to warn his wife of something, because this guy's wife had died. And this doctor was named Harry Gordon. He was using the experiments done at the CERN laboratory in Switzerland, which later on they discovered maybe wasn't true, but anyway, at the time, at the CERN laboratory in Switzerland, as we mentioned earlier, they claimed that a particle called a neutrino had been discovered that travels faster than the speed of light. That being the case, Professor Harry Gordon said, okay, we can send a message. Go ahead, Brett. Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
I didn't say anything.
Okay. Nope. That you could send a message through back in time because this particle travels faster than the speed of light. Okay, so there's the theory. They visit the guy to discuss it, the BBC, and the guy like breaks down. Now, just because he was emotionally motivated for this to save his wife's life doesn't mean it wasn't an interesting theory. It was turned out later that this particle, this neutrino, doesn't move faster than the speed of light, though. But again, he was motivated emotionally. And one of the things, you know, I personally, I'm just speaking for me, find comforting is the idea, as Pythagoras believed in transmigration, the idea of reincarnation, and in many lives. And if this scientist was sort of viewing this from this sort of cold atheistic point of view, but with some hope being drawn from science, and he was clearly not, in this interview, was clearly not over his wife's death yet. And that, like I said before, the interview looked almost a bit cruel. You were almost at a point going, all right, dude, you can stop, you know, asking the guy about his wife now. It looked a little odd. He took him out to the shed where it looked a little bit like A Beautiful Mind. There was all these like wacky papers all over the place, and I mean it was, but hey, that could have just been his workspace, right? I mean, I'm not here to judge anybody.
Sure.
And later on in Italy and in elsewhere, they tested out the neutrinos, and the claim is they don't move faster than the speed of light. Of course, then you'll have other people saying, they just set that test up not to let us know what the truth is, da 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 da, and we can get into all that stuff. I try to stay away from Illuminati-type material on the show. I just try to bring up what's in the press that I can prove, or at least as far as certain political things. And I'd like to take this time out to send a quick plug out. Couple plugs here. Esoterica, www.esotericanova.com. Still with our New Age interfaith focus, herbs, crystal stones, oils, candles, incense, divination tools, and more. www.esotericanova.com. Maybe brick and mortar again one day. And our co-host you've been listening to here has a show on Fridays, usually from 5 to 7 or maybe from 5:30 to 7:30.
Right.
Kevin Baird, www.templeofgaia.com, as well as being a member of Artisans United.
It's called Walking on the Sidewalk.
Yes, the show is Walking on the Sidewalk, Journeys from the Horizon.
Oracle Journeys.
Awesome.
I really like that name, by the way. I don't know if I got a chance to tell you, Kevin. I really like that name. I thought it was clever.
I thought his show sounded great with the music in the background. Did you get a chance to hear it, Brett?
I have not had the chance yet. I
thought it sounded very smooth.
That I miss tomorrow.
So on Friday.
Okay. All right. And soon we'll be doing, I've mentioned this before, so I'm going to be getting to it soon now, doing a show about urban farming and planting food in cities, as well as a show, I'm preparing it. I've got a couple different guests I want for this show, and I won't announce it yet. The one about saving the bees. I've mentioned it. They say we've lost 70% of our bee population, which can lead to worldwide famine.
And I always say we have to be cautious.
Oh, very much so. They have started to put about $80 million into this problem, at least. So at least the government is now paying attention to it. And as well as private groups are organizing the sponsoring of hives. Because this is a non-political environmental issue. This is just, hey, it can lead to a famine. So whether or not you have any concern for the bees or not, if you have a concern for your own food supply, this could be an interesting environmental issue for someone to get behind, regardless of your political leanings.
Right.
So I'm going to try to get some expert here to help us discuss that as well.
I wonder what it would take to start one. I wanted to start my own beehive.
There's a group you can go to, and it's called, if I'm getting it right, I'll post it later if I can't think of it off the top of my head. I think it's called the Bee Conservatory, and it tells you, like, all that, like starting your own or just sponsoring one. Like, you can just sponsor one. Like, say a lot of people don't want, you know, a beehive in their property,
right.
A bunch of bees buzzing around, I guess, but you can just sponsor one, send some money. And there's something to do with they're working with Native American reservations for sponsoring beehives as well. So this is kind of branching out into different things. So if you don't want to get your hands, I guess, stung in this case, you can just send the money and have one sponsored. There's another myth, back to our time travel, I mentioned earlier, but for those of you just joining us, was from the Irish folklore, was Finn McCool, who goes to visit the Fairy King of the Fairies, and parties hard for a few days, as this character Finn McCool is known to do. And he, after hanging out with the Fairy King in his realm, he wishes to return to the mundane world and is given a magical horse by the Fairy King and is told, just like in the other Japanese myth, you can return, but do not get off of this horse. Do not dismount this horse. So, of course, he sets out on his journey back to the mundane world. And at some point, you know, he feels like he's got to get off the horse. Curiosity gets the best of him. As soon as his feet hit the ground, he rapidly ages and dies. So again, there's also stories in India like this. There's all sorts of stories in the past mythos that deal with people traveling through time or dimension or to heavenly worlds and then being sent back to their regular place.
Daniel.
Yes, go ahead.
Even continuing, you know, even in the past, we also have it in, you know, modern storytelling and, you know, really following the story of a myth, of a hero. We have, in kind of a modern way, more the Terminator movies even. Because the main characters aren't heroes yet, but in the future where some of them come back to, they tell, you know, that they are going to become or that they are not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of takes an interesting twist on the story of a hero going back in time. It's the people that make them heroes going back and making them learn the lessons because they've already experienced what the main characters will eventually do. Which, of course, though, that changes things because, you know, going back in time messes things up. But the point is the main character is still going through a kind of a heroic story, and there's time displacement and things are changing because of what we make them to be.
Mm-hmm. So that gets back
Which
into what we were talking
about.
That gets back into what we were discussing earlier about what's our role in it, meaning that it was someone's actions almost that made this person into the hero that they knew they would eventually become. So,
right.
Someone else goes back in time and goes, Kevin Baer, I've got to teach you how you're going to be a great hero in the future. And he's like going, what? And then you sort of, it's almost like you're pulling him to his destiny or pushing him towards his destiny, whoever that hero would be.
The world is 10% what we are and 90% on how we react to it.
And that goes into, again, what we were saying, what's our role in all of this, in string theory and quantum mechanics and time travel? And again, this myth I was just talking about of he dismounts the horse. That was his protection. That was his bubble. He dismounts it. He grows old and dies. He was granted the ability to time travel or to interdimensionally travel, but within some sort of a safe protection. In the case of the myth of Urashima Taro, it was he was given a magical box by his wife and was told not to open it, and when he does, he ages and dies. So myths have had that concept of the protective bubble that now scientists are discussing as what might be needed if physical time travel were ever to be a reality. But then, as we were also saying, there's other time travel, perhaps astral or spiritual, or just using a glimpse into another time for a therapeutic purpose, such as you, Brett. Didn't you have a past life regression not that long ago?
I have hints and pieces of my past lives. One of them I know for a fact I walked with the god Odin. I know for a fact that all of my, you know, my life debts are currently clean. So I'm kind of working on a fresh slate.
I've gotten that one too. I had debts, like horrible ones, but I paid them off. But go ahead.
And I have a horrible feeling based on a reading and a couple of talks that in one of my past lives, I had a real powerful enemy. And because of that fact, a lot of innocent people died.
Mm.
It wasn't because of me directly, but it was a result of my actions, you know? Which is kind of sobering.
I had a similar one, but I don't know, if it was just a fantasy dream or vision, where it was not because of my actions, it was because of my inaction, because I didn't do it. I didn't step up to the plate and help. So that was almost like a saying that, yeah, you got to show up and you got to be brave. And I won't get into specifics of that dream because it's actually pretty awful. But
I don't have the exact details of mine, but it's a horrible feeling that I'm seeing that I seem to get from a reading and through a couple of other people's past lives that were I somehow have connected. It's long story. I do plan to actually talk to someone I know who does past life regressions, and I can at least figure out some more details. I'm not not going thinking I will know everything, because I think it's probably better that I don't in a lot of ways, but
right.
having some clarity would probably be nice.
And I'd also like to, speaking of clarity, I'd like to clarify how one should, in a healthy way, advance into researching their own past life path. And that is very simply to understand that we've all been good and bad. So don't go in there being afraid to be like, oh my gosh, I was a coward. I ran away from battle and I'm still a coward or whatever. You know, that was one story I remember hearing, and the guy was like freaked out. We've all been all of those things. We've all been brave. We've all been cowards. We've all been criminals. We've all been heroes to some degree, on some level, on some front. And so we've had different...
One I've noticed is that everyone has kind of an outcast life as well, where they kind of, you know, they have that life where they really need to be alone for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken some interesting turns on how that's played out, but it's just in my conversations with people, they've all had a life where one was either a drifter or cast out of their home or was homeless or something like that. They all have kind of an out of touch with the common, with people life. That
you
one
like
you might
a,
find common. As well.
Good. You mean like a hermit?
Yeah, that one too. But that wasn't where I was going. That one's
no.
self-imposed. Hermits are self-imposed. This was forced.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because I know that's a card that comes up for you so often, is the hermit. Of course, in the tarot, the hermits were a bi character as well. Go ahead.
Fancy for my show. The Main Street Hermit. So when that's ready to go, probably after this semester class, I'll be probably ready to go into that.
And I wanted to touch upon the difference between some of our shows, especially for those that are new. Well, actually, this whole thing's new, so it's kind of new to everybody, I guess, as far as us being a network now, Main Street Universe Network. Wednesday is the flagship show. That is Main Street Universe. And it's meant to be more of a community show that does this debate and discuss issues a little less specific maybe than some of the other ones. It's meant to be community art, all sorts of issues, including sometimes just things like having a musician on to talk to, like we have in the past, Rob Fahey, Kellyanna, da-da-da-da. Then we have Thursday's show, which is Edwin Pass, who sort of specializes in Eastern pantheons and as well as creation pantheons. I'll let him explain all of that. He's big into what he calls religion as art and creating your own religious reality. So he's got a lot of interesting insights. And is a pretty good reader himself. He reads from the Crowley deck. With that beautiful smoke crystal that he had in here the other day, that was a big, beautiful crystal that he puts on his deck, a smoky quartz. It's got a really little phantom thing going on inside, really nice crystal. Anyway, and, of course, we have Kevin Baird's show, which is a little more specific. It's on the Horizon Oracle. Walking on the sidewalk, Horizon Oracle Journeys, and that is on every Friday, usually 5 or 5:30. 7 or 7:30, depending on his schedule. And Brett, you're going to be doing little half-hour segments, right?
Yes, and mine will be a more informative type show. I plan to do a series of topics at a time.
Yeah.
I might do a couple of shows a week, but they'll only be a half hour long. So,
right.
One of my plans, of course, I'll be going through various holidays, and I'm not talking just about the eight Sabbaths. I'm talking about various other cultures and where they come from and see some similarities there. Talk about maybe a specific god, a specific week. It'll be that type of feel. So it'll be a more informative show.
Yeah, like around Christmas and Yule, you have the Festival of Lights in India, right? That's one that some people don't know about.
Exactly.
But around similar times, not exactly the same, but... other side of the world, of course. But also, Brett, I don't know if this one is still in the working, but weren't you also working with someone else for like an advanced, kind of a very specifically like an advanced witchcraft
yes.
show, basically?
Yes, it would be more an advanced witchcraft show. I don't know what it and what it's going to be called yet. I'm still in talks. The person I'm working with just got a new job, so she's getting settled in there. So,
okay.
Congratulations to Kay, as I will refer to her until such time that she chooses a name for the show. And I will be working with her as kind of more, I will probably be taking on a more secondary role there. I will be the, hopefully it doesn't end up being an outright shouting match, but I am more eclectic while she is more traditional.
I wanted to touch on that.
So,
as part of our free speech policy here at Main Street Universe, that if I remember correctly, this gal is much more Reconstructionist and traditional than say, I or Kevin or you, who tend to be more universal and eclectic in our approach. But that's fine, because I think it'll offer an interesting depth to our network to have somebody that's more traditional. And she, you know, wears a head wrap, and she's a very traditionalist kind of Reconstructionist girl. But, you know, everybody has a right to their thing.
And it will take some interesting, we'll be careful to put an interesting balance to the show as well, because I will be remaining eclectically so.
Yes, because the rest of us are, including Evan, the new host starting tomorrow, we have our traditions, of course, but, you know, we're all kind of universal in our approach. You know, Kevin came from a traditionalist coven at one time, but now he's very eclectic, and we all have our own little backgrounds. But I think that makes it interesting, though, that we'll also have kind of a Reconstructionalist, traditionalist, advanced witchcraft teacher on our network. I think that'll provide a good diversity so people can, if they think, oh, I just sound like some, you know, new age hippie eclectic guy, well, they can go listen to a traditionalist on one of our other nights and get that fixed. And
right.
And I think she'll do a good job.
So we'll see. I'm not exactly sure what kind of topic she's thinking of. That's going to be mainly her baby, and I'm just going to be there along for the ride.
Sure. It'll be interesting to hear. I'm interested in tuning in and see what she has to say. And in fact, she's close. There are occasionally times where she could come here and do the show in studio here, if it's, you know, she so desires to.
So desires, yes.
She's not that far away from us here. I think she's in a neighboring town. Anyway.
One thing that'll be interesting with all of our shows is how none of our shows are going to be on at the same time as Fagan's Night, but none of our shows are going to be on at the same time. So specific days of the week, you can actually listen, if you can't listen live to one show, just because if you work the same time every day, you might be able to listen to another show, because mine is going to be planned to be later and can be picked up for those of you that are, you know, early sleepers. You can get it up in the archives the next day. So I'm not worried about listeners. It's just, it'll be all different times.
Yeah, because we have the AM shows, which is Main Street Universe, the flagship show, and Evan's show. He has a name for it now. I just don't know what it is. But he came up with one, and he'll be putting it up on the marquee probably late tonight or early tomorrow morning. So it'll be there. And we're coming down to it, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And again, we were just mentioning, I'm trying not to be one of the shows that talks about our shows too much, but it's all brand new.
we're entering a new transition. We are transitioning into a network, so it is important to bring it up.
Absolutely, it is. I know, I was just kidding. I've heard some shows, they massage themselves all day.
We're trying not to do at least for half the show. I mean, right? We've heard, we've all heard that.
We deserve a little bit of a massage, right? Everybody does. And I'd just like to say, remember, we are growing tomorrow, 11 a.m., Friday, 5, for Kevin. So join us tomorrow at 11, or listen to the archives, which, of course, as I state in the beginning, means that next week you can listen to Last Week This Week in our archive section. Thank you, Kevin, for being here.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Brett, for being here.
And you are very welcome.
And Thank you, everyone, for listening and in the chat room. And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Blessed be.